Welcome to Against the Law. My name is Flo, and I've got COVID, so let me just clear my throat.
Hello, and welcome to Against the Law, the myth-busting ancient history podcast that aims to sort fact from friction in the ancient world. If you should hear this noise, that's the Against the Law gavel smacking out historical mistruths. For today, we're going to have the usual gang plus a special guest. Let me introduce the pecking order. She's a groovy chick. That's right, it's Xenia here to share some of her knowledge about the ancient Romans. Meg is here, and she rules the roost when it comes to info on the ancient Greeks. And he's a real good egg. It's Barney with some excellent facts to learn about the ancient Near East. We're also delighted to be joined by Ophélie Labrasseur, Marie Curie Research Fellow at the Centre for Anthropobiology and Genomics of Toulouse in France, and experts in all things chicken. I'm Flo, and I'm going to be winging it today, because I don't know much about the ancient world, but I am in an absolute flap over today's episode about chickens.
Hello everyone, I'm Ophélie Labrasseur. I'm a Marie Curie Research Fellow from the Centre of Anthropobiology and Genomics of Toulouse at the CNRS in France, and I have been studying chickens for over 10 years now. It's been a very long journey, but more excitingly, it's in the last month we've published a couple of research that really reevaluates our understanding of chickens, how they came to be about, and how they're dispersed across the world.
Lovely. Okay, well, welcome to the podcast. I'm going to start by asking a question that is, I suspect, going to be an immediate against the law. But my assumption is that in the ancient world, chickens were only used for their meat and for their eggs. Now, I'm going to presume that I've got this wrong because I've started every podcast of this season with something stupid that is wrong. So have we got any takers to tell me that I am wrong?
So actually today, indeed, we have chickens are primarily used for food. They outnumber 10 to 1. They outnumber us 10 to 1, which is pretty impressive for a bird. It's the most numerous birds that we find on the planet. They have other roles as well in our modern society. They, for instance, have been used as pets to help with companionships, for instance, for elderly people. And we know that up until relatively recently, there was a lot of this cockfighting as well, although this has been banned in a lot of countries. But back in the past, chickens weren't actually seen as a source of food, or at least not when they were first introduced, because not only are they not native to Europe, but they were also, when they were first introduced into Europe, really associated with the gods and revered, essentially.
Wow, wait, so they don't originate in Europe. Where do they come from originally?
No, they come from Southeast Asia. You have four species of what's called the jungle fowl, and that's the wild ancestor of the chickens. They actually go by colors. They go by like green, red, and gray jungle fowl. We do have a fourth one, which is from Sri Lanka, the island of Sri Lanka near India, that's the Sri Lankan jungle fowl. And based on genomic studies, we've been able to see that the red jungle fowl is the main wild ancestor of the chickens. So obviously it's domestication with have needed to be done to take place within this geographical distribution, and that's in Southeast Asia.
Wow, because when I think of chickens, I think of those red, like the ones that I'm thinking of are called Rhode Island Reds. They are like the bog standard chicken that you get in backyards or on farms. So when did they come to Europe?
So actually, the thing is, like, when you think about the Rhode Island Red, it's a very recent poultry breeding development. It's really in the last 50 to 100 years, really. Actually, when we first see them in Europe, we now know they arrived around about 800 BC. So that's a lot later than a lot of the other domestic animals. For instance, a lot of the other domestic animals, you see reach Britain around the 6th millennium BC. But when you look at chickens, they only reach Britain about the 6th to 5th century BC.
Wow, that's amazing.
That's blown my mind. So they're really relatively recent. And I suppose we must have bred them up to be much bigger so that we've got more meat, or that they're better layers so that we can have more egg yield.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, it was back in the 1950s where there was, because up until the 1950s, chickens were, they weren't really a big part of our diet as well, in the sense that they were, it was mostly like women who were taking care of them. And then they started thinking about the fact that we needed to produce, we had this kind of contest that was called the Chicken of Tomorrow. And from then on, essentially, we started breeding them a lot for meat. And in the space of 60 to 70 years, they've quadrupled in size, essentially, to meet the consumer's demand. It's impressive just how much we think of the chicken today, but it's only very, very recent developments.
So does that mean that chickens in the ancient world were smaller, if you said that they've been bred to be bigger?
Yes, yeah, definitely a lot smaller than the ones that we have today for that you see, for instance, in your supermarket. We do see an increase, obviously, through time, but not as much as we can see in the last 50 to 70 years.
Did you say there was a competition called the Chicken of Tomorrow?
It was more a program, if I remember well. It was held in the USA about the Chicken of Tomorrow in the 1950s.
That is incredible. The Chicken of Tomorrow. I absolutely love that.
Yeah, it sounds like a sci-fi novel.
An episode of the original Star Trek.
I do love that. Right, so I'm going to hand over to the rest of the crew then. So chickens, were they just for meat and eggs in your areas of the ancient world?
I've got some sacred chickens. They were very important. So just to clarify, they were eaten as meat, and there are lots of recipes that involve chicken and eggs, especially our most famous chef from the Roman world, Apicius. He uses lots of eggs in his recipes. But yeah, at the start of the Roman Republic especially, we've got some sacred chickens, and I've got some stories that are about what happens when you don't listen to the sacred chickens.
Oh, you've always got to listen to your sacred chickens, I find, in my personal experience.
Exactly. So this is during the First Punic War, which is the war of Rome versus Carthage. And a guy called Publius Claudius Pulcher was leading a naval force out to engage with the Carthaginian fleet. Now, in our last episode, we also had a Claudius Pulcher. This is his ancestor. Remember, Pulcher means beautiful. So he's supposed to be handsome, but he was not very clever, because when the sacred chickens that were on board the ship, actually, so that he could take the omens just before he engaged in battle, when he let them out and to see if they would eat or drink, they didn't eat or drink, and that was supposed to be a bad omen. But Pulcher was so keen to get on with his naval battle that he said, well, if they don't eat, let them drink. And he tossed them overboard. And can you guess what happened in his naval battle?
He lost it.
Yes.
To a giant sea chicken.
That's not a good way to treat any kind of sacred object, whether it's animate or not animate. That's like, you know, you're obviously cursing yourself at that point.
Yeah, it's straight up a bad way to treat animals.
I know. Fortunately, chickens are quite buoyant, though. I've seen them in paddling pools, and they quite happily bob on the surface. So we don't know. They might have had a good time.
I think the potential for excellent sound bites from today is very high, because I couldn't have predicted that we would have the words chickens are quite buoyant on this podcast.
And Flo knows that from personal experience.
I do. You know, if you haven't dunked a chicken once in a while, my mother-in-law's got lots of Rhode Island Reds and Bantams, and they love a good bath when it's hot. So, Meg, I'm going to pick on you now. In ancient Greece, chickens, were they only used for meat and eggs?
No, they were used for lots of things, or they had lots of different sort of symbolisms and uses, let's say. They were used for meat and eggs, but not like a huge amount. So the Greeks ate eggs, and they did eat chicken, but not very often. They didn't eat much meat in general, to be honest. The Greeks called chickens the Persian bird, because it reached Greece via Persia, I believe, or at least that's what they thought. But they used them for cockfighting, which was very popular, and I have some fun stories, which I can tell you now or later. Also, the chicken was kind of a symbol of Athens as well. They kind of used it as like a symbol of the defence of the city, because the chicken is associated with Athena, you know, Athena, who's the, you know, patron goddess of Athens, and she defends the city. And if you won a prize in one of the athletic festivals, in the All of Athens festival, then you would get your prize amphora, which would have a painting of Athena and two roosters on it. So the chickens were very much a symbol of the way that Athens is protected and has this kind of special identity. So I thought that was quite interesting that the chickens have that as well.
That's very much how I feel when I go to Nando's and I finish a large meal and I get to take home a napkin with their rooster logo on it.
Yes, that's
very
true.
Very victorious. I can raise up my amphora of peri-peri sauce and feel very pleased with myself. Bonnie, the Persian bird.
Yes, interesting that name. I don't know if any of our listeners remember, but way back in the food episode, which was in series one, I think, we mentioned names for chickens in the ancient world because obviously the people in Persia didn't call it the Persian bird. I don't actually know what they did call it, but I know that the Akkadian-speaking people of Mesopotamia called it the bird of Meluha, which is the Indus Valley, which I guess, according to what Ofeli was saying earlier, is a good direction for where it came from for them, right?
Yes, no, precisely. It's essentially it's retracing their dispersal from South Southeast Asia all the way towards the West. I think the confusion which some of the earlier findings, let's say, is that obviously you have the red jungle fowl, but you also have a few other as well, which could be confounded with chickens in the records. So it's very important to make sure that we know that we're definitely talking about domesticated animals. So there's been some questions about what we believe is a chicken depicted in art, for instance, in the Levant, but even in Egypt, for instance. It's figuring out, was it actually a domesticated chicken or was it another one of those jungle fowl species that were introduced as well. But when it comes to the chickens themselves, we do know that they reached the Levant during the Iron Age. And what's incredibly interesting is from all of your stories that you've mentioned, which, by the way, Zinia, the one with the general is just, it's one of my favorites. It's just I really like not listening to the sacred chickens and suffering defeat as a result. But what's really interesting is you see chickens being introduced into all those different regions. And then it takes about 500 years or so to start seeing them being used for food. They're first introduced, they're this kind of rare exotica that people have never seen before. And there's this feeling that because they come from afar, there's a correlation with the distance from where they come from and their association with gods, with cosmological powers, essentially. And then several centuries later, they become very common and they start being eaten. And it's a bit of a downfall for the poor chickens.
Oh dear, it's a bit like when pineapple was first introduced in Britain. It was seen as such an object of exotic sort of wealth and excitement that people would buy pineapples to display in their houses until they rotted. So they weren't actually eaten.
Yeah, that's exactly it. it's like I mean, if you think of the jungle fowl, it's incredibly flamboyant. It's colorful. I mean, if you think about the landscape in Europe, for instance, back around the time where the chicken was introduced, it was very kind of like brown and gray and beige. And then you have this chicken that comes, which is like green and golden, and it becomes this kind of amazing animal.
It's amazing, isn't it, that we're really resistant to eat animals that are considered really pretty, like peacocks or parrots. You wouldn't serve a parrot sandwich or a grilled peacock breast, but chickens are fair game.
Interesting that that reputation of them as sort of beautiful and flamboyant and stuff like that made me think of the Sumerian word for chicken, or allegedly for rooster, should I say, not for chicken, but for rooster, is Dar Lugal, which means the king's fowl.
Oh.
Yeah, and maybe that's to do with the crest and the crown.
That's really interesting. The Greek word for, so originally they were called the Persian bird, the Persicos ornis, but then in Greece they were called an alector, which comes from the verb alexo, which means to defend or ward off. So they do seem to have these quite powerful names. And that, again, links to what I was saying about like Athena as a defence of the city. But it's interesting that they were also seen as kind of kingly in other cultures as well.
The noble chicken. It's interesting that Ofeli mentioned Egypt there. I was not prepared for the level of controversy around the identification of chickens in ancient Egypt.
Is anyone prepared?
I honestly found so many papers from the 20th century, people arguing back and forth as to whether certain representations, as Ofeli was saying, could be identified as chickens or not. And people were even going so far as to suggest that one of the hieroglyphs, there's a series of chick hieroglyphs, starting with G43, was a chicken rather than, some other sort of fowl or quail or something like that. And people were just arguing as to whether or not this could be considered a chicken. I think ultimately the decision was no, because these would have developed thousands of years before chickens had arrived in Egypt. But yeah, and just some of the lines that they were coming out with, like they were talking about a bit of temple graffiti near Thebes that they were wondering whether was identified as a chicken or not. And I read the sentence with my own two eyes that this may be the first fairly definite representation of the cock in Egypt.
Wow. Excellent.
And that was allegedly from 1850 BC, which, I don't know, sounds a little dubious to me, actually.
I've got a very daft question relating to archaeology, and I presume that we can't check for chick bones because they are so fragile and tiny, so we can't see through history when people ate them. Like seeds and grains you can find in poo. You could find it preserved in poo in archaeology, can't you? But you can't necessarily see breakdown of proteins and what those were.
So actually, it depends on where we look in the world. In Europe, for instance, there's quite a lot of excavations that have taken place, and we've been able to find chicken bones. But when you look more into Southeast Asia, for instance, there isn't actually that many archaeological excavations that have been undertaken. But also, you're right, chicken bones are so... They have a very light bone matrix that they tend also to degrade a lot faster in those in certain environmental conditions as those as well in Southeast Asia. So it's actually a lot harder to find them. And that's kind of our challenge as archaeologists when it comes to chicken bones, is they tend to move through the stratigraphy as well. If you find an isolated chicken bone, which is one of the earliest you found in a particular region, chances are that it might be intrusive. It might actually come from a much later time period, which is... and actually, we did this across in one of our studies, is we looked at 23 of the earliest proposed chickens across Europe. And actually, we found that only 5 of them were originally the date that they were supposed to be according to the archaeological context.
That's a good against the law, against the chicken law.
So instead of a red herring, it's like a red chicken, a Rhode Island red chicken hiding in time.
If you're enjoying the podcast, please consider supporting us on Patreon. You can become a Bacchanalian backer or a Babylonian bell ringer, and you'll get each episode a day early, as well as a host of other benefits. Support us for as little as £2 a month.
I'm quite interested in the sort of symbology of chickens, because I think we mentioned a little bit mm-hmm. that they're sort of symbolic of Athens. Could anybody tell me more about the symbology of chickens, or potential chickens, if we're talking about Egypt, that we might be able to share examples of?
Yeah, so it's really interesting, the sort of symbolism attached to chickens in the ancient world, in ancient Greece, as well as being seen as defenders of the city, and possibly in relation to that, the Greeks also thought the chickens were incredibly sexual. They're like the sexiest bird, which is just super interesting. And I don't know, Ophelia, if you've got any knowledge about whether chickens are actually particularly kind of sexually active, but Aristotle said that chickens are the only animals beside humans who mate not kind of in specific seasonal cycles or during limited periods, but just are all year round going at it. Again, I don't know if that's true or accurate.
I think from my understanding it's something that's also developed through their domestication as well. What's really interesting, but it's a lot later in time, is that when you look at about 1,000 years ago, you have across Europe and especially in Britain, you end up in seeing that there's a huge increase in egg and meat production. And that actually comes from a treaty by the Benedictine monastic order that was saying, look, you can... During the fasting periods, you cannot eat 4-legged animals, but 2-legged animals are fine. And then suddenly you end up in seeing a massive increase in the archaeological record when it comes to chicken bones and chicken eggs. But you also see this selection on the gene as well, which is responsible for the laying of the eggs as well. So it's really interesting that you see this increase about 1,000 years ago.
Wow. Okay. So there were a lot of baby chickens.
Yeah, what you're saying is 4 legs bad, 2 legs good for eating.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. Yeah. That's a subversion.
There's a funny story about Diogenes, who's a Greek philosopher, who, when Plato says that a man is a featherless biped, Diogenes apparently plucked a chicken and brought it to Plato's Academy and said, look, got you a man. because it was a featherless biped at that point. And then the Academy added that the definition of a man was also that he has broad, flat nails, which a chicken didn't have. So speaking of bipeds, but yes, yeah, sexy chicken. So that's really interesting that kind of, like you're saying, a load more chickens coming out in about 1,000 years ago. But it was so accepted that chickens were sort of known for their sexual prowess. And there's a reference to a sort of ancient aphrodisiac recipe. The result of it is it promises that you will have an orgasm like a chicken.
Now that is a promise.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
Imagine if Nando's got hold of that marketing advice. That would be amazing.
Yeah, it's amazing, isn't it? I just love that. And yeah, they thought like chickens, quails were all very... Aristotle calls them heavy birds, and he thinks they're kind of very like virile and sexual, as opposed to like taloned and feathery birds. I don't really know what feathery birds are, if not chickens, but feathery birds who are kind of a bit more feminine and not sexy, which again, it tells you so much about the Greek psyche. It's very interesting. But you also get, don't really know how to describe it other than penis chickens, which are sort of sculptures. Oh. Sculptures and motifs of a sort of penis chicken hybrid.
If there was something I was expecting to hear today, it was not penis chickens.
No, yeah.
As you say, Meg, I think this tells us more about the Greeks than it does about chickens.
Yeah, absolutely. Oh, this tells us almost nothing about chickens. It just tells us a hell of a lot about how the Greeks thought about, yeah, themselves.
You've talked about this orgasmic chicken recipe. Have we got any other ancient world chicken food related topics?
Yes, so I've got a recipe for Parthian chicken. Now, it would have been really interesting if this was a reference to where the chicken came from, but unfortunately it's not. It's actually a reference to where a different ingredient than the recipe came from, which is asafoetida from Afghanistan. So, sorry, the Romans bucked the trend of attributing the chicken to somewhere else. They just like their chickens. So, Parthian chicken involves chicken, a leek, some red wine, some dates, some of the Romans' favourite thing, fish sauce, asafoetida, celery leaves, and caraway seeds. So it's quite well spiced.
Sounds delicious.
I actually really like how we talk about indeed the Romans and their recipes, because it's also them who have popularized the idea of chickens as food. So that's really interesting. Because when chickens arrived, obviously, it was more like, yeah, they were associated a lot with gods. For instance, we see them that a lot of the earliest chickens that we see are actually individually buried skeletons. And we don't see any butchery marks. There's no evidence that they were consumed for food. And then a bit later on, around the late Iron Age, early Roman period, then you begin to see human chicken co-burials. And actually, those are strongly gendered, thinking about the Greeks. Like, we see that the males are buried with cockerels and the females are buried with hens. And then as you go through time, when you get about the first to third century AD, you start seeing with the Romans a lot of popularization of chicken and eggs as foodstuff. So it's interesting how chickens has gone through reverence to food within the Roman period.
That is amazing. I also love the idea of this gendered burial. And I suppose we can only sort of assume the reasons why, but it's just, I find it amazing first off that you can tell the difference after all those years underground. That's incredible.
There's a few evidence that you can look for. For instance, for hens, when they lay eggs, they create this medullary bone within their bone structure. And so if you can find it in the bones, then you know that the chicken was a hen and it was laying eggs as well, which is actually the case of one of the earliest chickens that we find in Britain as well. And then for the cockerels, you end up seeing, for instance, on one of the legs, you have the spurs. So you can tell, for instance, that they're male. I mean, if they're castrated, it's a bit more complicated, but it gives you information if you find the spur in the archaeological record.
During my research, I found out that the Romans would sometimes deliberately castrate chickens because then they got fatter, sorry, cockerels, because then they got fatter quicker and they were better for eating. But they did also enjoy cockfighting and they'd like give them extra metal spurs to go on top of their existing spurs.
Yes, the Greeks did that too. It's so weird. They gave them like weapons. It's bizarre.
Weaponized chicken.
Yeah.
And here was me thinking the most the most lethal a chicken could be was if it had salmonella, but that sounds way worse. yeah, I want to hear more about cockfighting, Meg, if you've got some more tales from ancient Greece.
Yeah, so they did cockfighting, and they're really keen on that. Popular spectator sport, and you get a lot of like depictions of it in Greek art and pottery and sculpture and stuff. And there's a sort of specific motif of like young boys watching cockfights. And there's a really nice sculpture, sort of Hellenistic era, which we can tweet out a picture of, which is two boys, like really, you know, toddlers watching a cockfight. And it's really cute because you can tell who's winning from the poses of both the chickens and the little boys. One kind of looks really devastated and defeated, and his cockfight looks really sad as well. No, the other one's winning. But yeah, they were really interested in it. And again, this kind of links to the idea of the chicken as like this really aggressive, kind of virile image. There was a proverb that was sort of translates to something like the cock treads on his victim. And that means something like, you know, he's rubbing it in. He's a bad winner, I guess. But there's a great story that kind of links to what Zenia was talking about earlier about the sacred, the omens about the chickens, which is, and this is again, a pinch of salt from a lot later, might not be true, but when the Greeks were fighting the Persians, and the general Themistocles was leading an army of Greeks to take part in the Battle of Marathon. And on the way, he saw some cocks fighting. I don't think this was an organised cockfight. I think it was, you know, one in the wild. And the story goes that he didn't take this lightly, but he turned to the army and he said that these cocks are undertaking this fight, not for their country, not for their, you know, household gods, not for their ancestors, not for fame or liberty or for their children, but so that they won't be beaten by the other one. And those were the words he used to encourage the Athenians, which I think is so weird because the Athenians were fighting for all of those things that he just said. But he was like, those chickens just hate each other. And that is what's going to get us to win this war. And they did win the Battle of Marathon. So there we go.
I wonder if cockfighting was like the original horse racing. I wonder if you could bet a load of money on it.
Well, I think there must have come a point in the ancient Near East when there was money in chickens.
Ooh.
Yeah. I found a study. I have to have a disclaimer here that this is not innate knowledge of Barney, but I enjoyed finding a study that had the claim for the earliest site in the world for the economic exploitation of chickens outside of East Asia, which was in modern day Israel. And apparently they had found an assemblage of 1,092 different chicken specimens. And so the argument goes that this was for eating and the economic exploitation of chickens rather than any sort of ritual or cockfighting purposes. So witness to that shift from, you know, chickens as sort of a religious symbol or cultural symbol to something that people were eating en masse. And this was from the Hellenistic period in Israel, so around 200 BC. But I think Ofeli might know about this study as well.
And no, it's from the site of Mauritius. It's very exciting when I read about this study because you're right, chickens arrived in the 11th, about 8th, 9th century BC. But then what you have with this site is you end up in seeing this massive assemblage from about the 3rd, 4th century BC, which seems to indeed have been economic exploitation. Just having the sheer number of bones is already attesting to the fact that they were definitely economically bred, I would say. But you also have this kind of this ratio as well of 2-to-1, the observed ratio is 2-to-1 of female to male bones, which would suggest, again, breeding practices as well. So it's really, it's definitely one of the key sites. It's very interesting.
Yes, my silly joke was that this is like the world's first KFC, but it sounds almost like a battery farm then, kind of like intensive breeding.
So I am desperate to know, Ofeli, what are your favourite ancient chicken facts or stories? Because we've done sort of some surface level research. I say we have. I haven't. I've done nothing. I've been doodling a picture of a chicken the entire time we've been doing this. So I would like to know your favourite stories or facts. I wonder if we were at a dinner party, what would you say to shock us or amaze us?
If we were at Nando's. So I think for me, there's a couple of points. There's two main points that I really like regarding all of this chicken research. It's the first one, indeed, how it's associated with cosmology and something that we were wondering is when we start seeing human and chickens co-burials in the late Iron Age, early Roman periods, we were wondering if chickens weren't actually included as graves as psychopomps, so basically leading the human soul to the afterlife.
And there's definitely like the association with the Mercury, Roman god of communication and travel, right? So, and we do have a site in Gloucestershire where we have a large quantity of cockerels that actually have been sacrificed at the Temple of Yuli. And I feel like I really like this association of chickens leading on to the afterlife.
That's amazing. That is incredible. The chicken of the future taking on a whole new meaning.
I like the journey that we've taken from Xenia's sacred chickens to sacrifice chickens. There's two opposite ends of kind of the same godly spectrum there.
Exactly, could then become food offering and then food, essentially. It's like this progression.
What a journey for the humble chicken to have taken from an exotic bird, something sacred, a companion, a psychopomp, which we've learned about in previous seasons, which I'm super pumped to learn now today. And now it's, you know, right up until today when you can order it with a side of creamy mash and some garlic bread. At everyone's favourite fast food restaurant.
Are we being sponsored by Nando's?
I wish.
I think we've asked ourselves this question before, didn't we? Like, yeah.
Two things Nando's hates: unseasoned chicken and historical misconceptions.
Perfect. I shall get in touch with them now. So that's an amazing fact. I love the idea of a psychopomp chicken. Have you got anything else you'd like to share that you can think of?
I think the other thing that we got really excited doing this research is, so I lived when I was younger in like Southeast in Malaysia, essentially, and chicken rice was essentially the main dish, right, in Malaysia. But actually, it's not that far off from the truth of when chickens were first domesticated, because at least this is our assumption based on the archaeological record and what we can see. But from what we can see, the archaeological record is we have those earliest identified chicken bones in Thailand. And at the same time, this is when you see the dry rice agriculture coming in to that region of the world as well. And it feels like, because red jungle fowls, they like to live, they're arboreal, they like to live in those environments. So, but then they see that we start clearing some of the environments for dry rice agriculture, which is also an environment that the red jungle fowl likes. And it would just, what we think is that it might actually have been attracted to the rice, because we know red jungle fowl eat rice as well. So it might actually have been drawn to the human niche with just by this coming of rice. And it's just, I really like this assumption, this correlation between chicken rice dish today and actually how it potentially all started.
So could chicken rice be like the oldest dish in the world?
That's the thing. I'd like to speculate on this. I don't know if we can ever say this for certain, to be honest. But I love the... just the similarity.
I love the idea that people were cultivating rice and then were like, oh, some proteins come along to join it.
Yeah.
This is helpful.
This thing is like, we think that, you know, how, why were they domesticated in the first place? It's still a question to be explored. But we think that there is definitely a link with rice and chickens.
That's so good. This rice is just calling out for something. I can't quite put my finger on it. Oh, there it is.
So our favourite things that we've learned from today's episode, as our guest, Ophelia, I'm going to go with you first. What was your favourite thing that you've learned today?
I've really enjoyed the association with chickens and Athena. That is something that I wasn't entirely familiar with. That's another line of evidence with chickens being associated with divinities.
Holy chickens. I love it. Godlike chickens. I thought that was fantastic as well. And since it was your fact, Meg, I'm going to go straight over to you.
Well, that's fantastic news, because my favourite thing, and I reckon other people's favourite thing, is Ophelia's fact about, or theory about, chickens being the psychopomp into the afterlife. That is my favourite fact possibly ever on the podcast, not just from this episode. That's incredible.
That was my favourite as well, so I'm going to begrudge you for that, but I have to agree. Barney, what was your favourite thing that you've learned today?
I actually liked the Themistocles, the cocks fighting, and saying they fight not for their country or for their family, but out of pure hatred. Encouraging the Athenians to fight like chickens to beat the Persians is just absurd. So, yes, I enjoyed that.
Brilliant. Yeah, me too. Xenia, what was your favourite thing from today?
I love the joint Ophelia and Barney fact about the chicken farm. I think that's fascinating, especially when we're like charting the progress of chickens across from Southeast Asia all the way to Europe, and then there's like one little spot of popularity before the Romans kind of take them and mass produce them.
I always think on this podcast, every podcast that we do, I always think we so underestimate ancient peoples, and we have so many misconceptions about sort of how basic people were. That's not true at all. There's sort of mass chicken farming, and like all the facts that we've learned today build such a rich picture of a really educated, intelligent, organized group of people in the ancient world.
Who really like chickens.
Who love chickens. And I will say my favourite fact was the psychopomps. But since I can't have that, I'm going to go with Xenia and chucking sacred chickens aboard. Was that Pulcair? Was that who he said it was?
Yep, that's Pulcair. Shouldn't do it. Never do it again. You'll lose your battles.
Pulcair, the so-called beautiful, but also quite stupid.
Yep.
Yeah. So that was my favourite fact for today's podcast.
In a reference to the programme that Ophelia mentioned, Chicken of Tomorrow, could we call this episode The Chicken of Yesterday?
Yes, let's call it
yes!
that.
Yes!
That's fantastic.
Chickens of Yesterday. That's amazing.
Absolutely marvellous. I've really enjoyed today. This has been really, really exciting stuff.